5 years later, she died. And I'll mention about the impact on our family, the impact on our church, and major transitions were ahead after she died, where I would make a decision to transition out of being pastor because I felt it was best for the church. Find out a year later my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and she would die 18 months after Deb died, carried out of our house. And so back there, the day Deb died, and I mean, God, yes, we knew God was there, but it was hard beyond anything I can describe. And I'll never forget standing in the parking lot of the funeral home and with Hope and Joy, and I said to him, I feel like I'll never see the sunshine this side of heaven again. And I really did think that and felt it for well over a year. I wrote in my journal just a couple weeks after Deb died, I wrote down, I see that though I've always believed and preached dependency on God, I'm really dependent now. I can't fix this. The grief was so huge. I can't get a plan and stop the bleeding. I do depend on God, but when God brings me through this, and He will, though I really can't feel confidence in that now, there will be a testimony with which to help people. Right now, though, it's a pitch black tunnel with no hope for the light at the end. And then by God's grace, I was able to write, this is a great place for me because God's got to do it. You ever been there? You couldn't do it. Most of us, even in our problems, we can kind of say, okay, this is hard, but I can do this. I can get this plan together. There was nothing I could do. I was just totally at the mercy of God. And that was my only light at the end of the tunnel, that God was going to do it. Well, 2007, a year after Deb died, the grieving continued, and tough issues in ministry. There's always tough issues in ministry. And then September, a year after Deb died, my mom is diagnosed with lung cancer. She lived in our house for 10 years with us. It's impossible to explain the impact that that had on me and on my children just a year after their mom died, to see their grandma diagnosed. It was like, it's just indescribable, the sense of heaviness. And then December through February after that, it was this transition out of being the pastor of the church and for somebody else coming in. And transitions have their blessings, but they can also be difficult. And then I was blessed by the church to have a sabbatical. I thought it would be relaxing and just take a breath, but it was anything but that. There were moments of that, but my mom got sicker and died in March during that time. And then we went through that whole grieving thing of her death. And then there was the reality as I was evaluating 25 years of ministry, of seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good was good. The bad was kind of bad, but the ugly was ugly. And I had to deal with stuff. I had to deal with the repentance of some things that I regretted, failures that I had had. It was hard. It was just hard. And felt like no man's land. And during that time, listen, during that time, my only solace really in life was going on walks with Jesus. That was it. And I went on a lot of walks with Jesus. And I think I poured out gallons of tears on those walks with Jesus. There's this verse in Lamentations where Jeremiah says, talking about what Israel and what they had been through, he said, my soul still remembers and sinks within me. I know what that's like. I understand what that's like. And many of you probably do too. He said, but then he said this, but this I recall to mind, therefore I have hope. Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed, because His compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness. And God's faithfulness was there with us during that time. and there were those times alone with God were the sustenance and the strength of my life. And more dependency on God. I had asked God to stamp eternity on my eyes. You know how I wanted Him to do it? I wanted Him to do it in the glory of the worship meeting with life just sailing along smoothly, and He just goes, boom, and I'm like, wow, eternity. God's got His ways of stirring our heart and bringing it from its fixation on this earth to eternity, doesn't He? He's got His way of doing it. Well, July of 2008, I'd been praying, what now? What do I do now, Lord? This is all I've done. What do I do now? I'm not going to be a computer programmer, that's for sure. And there's a lot of stuff I'm not going to... What am I going to do in July? No. What I mean by that is, if you knew my technical capacity and capability, you would say, do something else. That's what you would say. All right. Well, I was praying, Lord, what am I going to do? Went to California for some evangelism training with Living Waters. While I was there, I had been praying, frustrated. I wasn't hearing God's voice. While I was there, God spoke so clearly, and that's where Making the Gospel Known Ministries came from. That small, still voice that I heard from God, and the clouds began to break just a little bit. Now, this is about 2 years now after Deb has died. And then in the fall of 2008 into January of 2009, the ministry that we're doing now, kind of, you know what I am? I'm a pastor outside the church walls. That's what I am. And it's pretty cool, and it's pretty scary. And Linda, how often do we find ourselves in places where we just shake our heads and say, there's no way we can do this, right? All the time. Can I tell you real quick one about that? I don't want to ramble too much. Can I ramble just a little quick rabbit trail? Is that all right? We're up in Pennsylvania with a conference of homeschool parents in August of last year. And I'm training on evangelism and how to witness. And there's kids and parents. And I'm saying, you know, at the end of the week, we're actually going to go out to the mall. We're going to go out to the Chambersburg Mall, small mall. And we're going to put this into practice. And I'm saying, so get ready, and any of you would like to come. I'm thinking 10, 15 people, maybe, will say they want to come. We get to the last session before it's time to come. This is a Friday, like morning, and I'm saying we're going out Friday night or Saturday morning. We're going out Saturday night, whatever. And I said, now, if you would like to come, it's like everybody gets up and walks down, right? We had 69 people, right? Now, to do this right, you've got to have people to kind of be with them and train them. And I've got this kind of little group of trainers. And then we had to figure out how to get 69 people in cars in a coordinated effort to make a half-hour trip or 20-minute trip to the mall and then storm this mall. And I look at Linda as these people, and I'm saying, what am I going to do? And Linda, like the wonderful wife, she just looks at me and smiles and says, lead us. Lead us. And God did it. We couldn't. There's no way. And God did it in such a powerful way. These kids went. They came back so pumped, so psyched. They had preached the gospel. People had heard the gospel. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is this ministry, this outside the walls, it's just... It's a walk of faith. Your life's a walk of faith too, so that's okay. God had been preparing me for that. All those years, all those pastoring years, God had been preparing me for that. And during the same time period, I've been crying out to God for a wife. But it had to be a wife who could embrace the call of God. And then in January of 2009, which is now 2 years ago, I get a call from my daughter, Hope. And Hope, being the rather shy, laid-back daughter that she is, says, Dad, I found your wife! And February, after much prayer, I fearfully sent an email to this woman that Hope had found, named Linda, to see if I might be able to give her a call. And Linda, can you come up now, please? And Linda's going to tell you a little bit of testimony.
Hi. I want to rewind to September of 2000. My late husband, Joel, had had 2 days of work off. He had played ball with the kids, and we had gone on a date the night before. He gave the kids haircuts. I often think about how he had no idea he was giving them haircuts for his funeral. He went out for a walk. He was going to start seminary that night, and he decided he wanted to take a walk, and he didn't get too far from our house, maybe a quarter of a mile, and he got hit by a car, and the emergency equipment started coming in. The kids had no idea. He was a PA at an emergency room in Shady Grove. And I thought at first, oh God, you are so good to have him right at the right place at the right time. We live on a high school street. Cars go whizzing all the time. Those teen kids would get on in terrible accidents. But as the time passed, I began to be concerned. And sure enough, it was Joel that had gotten hit. The last moments I was with Joel was as he was on the stretcher and they were rushing him to the helicopter, and I was able to hold his hand and let him know that I loved him, and they whisked him away. And there was a real sense at the time of giving him into the Lord's hands. And they told me at the accident site that it was a collapsed lung, nothing to worry about, they would fix it. Got to the hospital, the doctor said no, it was a ruptured aorta. 50% of the people that come in to the hospital with a ruptured aorta walk out alive. At that point, 50% seemed like a lot of hope. 3 to 4 hours of surgery, he said. It ended up being 6. When he came out, he was shaking with the news. And he said he wasn't able to repair the ruptured aorta, that Joel had bled to death on the operating room table before they were able to fix it. That day, I had just put on maternity clothes. I was 3 months pregnant with my 10th child. That night, a couple hours after I got word from the doctor that Joel had died, was the first time I felt the little baby inside of me move. And that's such a picture to me of how God led us through, excuse me, the next months and years. The grief and the life and the joy and the pain all mixed up together. And God was good. God was good. I walked out of that hospital door, and I had this little bag of his belongings in my hand. Everything that he had on him, his shoes, his wallet, his glasses, his clothes. And God just planted 3 things in my heart with a certainty that carried me. One was that he was going to be a father to my children. 2 was that he was going to provide for us. And 3 was that he was going to glorify himself through our family in a really big way. And that was enough. It was enough. I knew there was no way that God would pluck a daddy with 10 kids, 7 of them sons, out of that family without having a really big plan. And God was faithful. He was good every step of the way. The pain was there. He doesn't do it outside of the pain. The grief, my place of coming before the Lord was my bedroom. I lived in the Psalms. I would run to my bedroom and cry my heart out to God. And he's there. He was faithful. And he taught me month after month after month, year after year, that he was enough. He's really enough. And we need to be bold and ask ourselves that question. Is God really enough? If he takes everything away, is he enough? And I know that he is. And he also taught me that, like Chris was saying earlier, my life is not my own. In fact, a couple years after Joel died, I put that in a poster, like in 32 font on my refrigerator. My life is not my own. I'm living this for him. everything comes from His hand and I can trust Him for it. And He showed me intimately how much He loves me and how much He cares for me and all of it. When Joel first died, I thought, God, You must have really loved Joel to have taken him home to be with You. And it wasn't a year later that I was saying, God, how much You love me to have taken Joel home so that I could learn these things that I'm learning about You. He's good.